Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit. You know, I'm a self-proclaimed psychotherapist for you guys who may not be aware. And yeah, so that's my jam. And thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. It's the greatest radio station in the Western Hemisphere. I've listened to all of them. This is definitely the best. So go to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.com. Check us out and, you know, donate some money. Donate some money because we provide a free platform to promote media literacy, education, all that stuff. Okay, guys? Okay. You know where you are now. But so I am very excited about my guest today. Maybe I'm a little nervous. She's somebody I look up to. I was probably a little nervous there in the beginning because you know how neurotic I am, right? But anyway, I have Lana Siebel on, and she is a incredibly talented comedian and so many other things, but I'm going to get to that in a second. I just wanted to let you know that I'm depressed. I think I was depressed last week too, but you know, I realized I just got to get this out here. Here's what's weird that happened in my life. Okay. This is so strange. In the last month, I have been to a reunion of all my advertising colleagues, a reunion of all my wacky performance art colleagues, a christening. I have never been to a christening before, and a memorial for a friend of mine's dad. And I've been like, why am I struggling? Why do I feel so lost? And then I realized, like, that's just too much heaviness. In what point? That's like life, death. And then, you know, you wind up feeling so old that you know, your niece who you saw as a kid is now a mom. Hmm. She has this huge house, a great husband. And it's like, how did she get that all together? And a baby. And it's like, I knew her as a kid. And like, I feel like, God, am I a failure? Anyway, so I'm going to tell you a little about Lana. And then we're going to, you know, okay, so here's another thing about Lana it's really interesting for me, and I think this will be interesting for all of us, because I've known Lana since like May, and this is actually the first chance I met her I met her initially because she runs an open mic at the Tiny Cupboard, but I've seen her perform many times. I mean, and her career is going gangbusters. I mean, she's a hardcore professional comedian that I happened to meet at the right time for me to meet her, because I don't think she's really even doing open mics anymore. Who knows? Who knows? We'll find out. But anyway, so this is the first time I've really gotten to sit down and talk to her, because normally she is just a rare person in the comedy world, as far as I can tell, because I decided during the pandemic that I wanted to start doing comedy, which is like kind of weird, but kind of whatever. I do this, right? I talk to you guys. I just need to learn how to do jokes. I don't know. I wanted to try it. Whatever. It's good to try new things, guys. Don't make fun of me, okay? So I decided that, and then I've tried this before over the years. I've taken a class, I've done the open mics, and the people are usually, you know, I'm just going to be nice and say not always friendly, okay? And you know what I mean, right? And being a comedian is super, super hard, and you can't, you know, you have to be really dedicated and ambitious and maybe even cutthroat like every other fucking creative field. Okay. So I'm not even being critical. But for some reason, I had the great good fortune of doing the first live, not on Zoom, open mic, and it was run by Lana. And I don't think Lana realizes what a gift that was to me. And it wasn't just because of her. It was because of all the vibe of the whole thing. So Lana is, and I know a lot of people feel this way about her because she's surrounded by people all the time, which is why I never get to talk to her at any of these things. Okay. But she's had a very interesting. I know enough about her. I'm going to tell you some shorthand comments about her background. She's sitting here. She's always, here's the thing that I really want to find out though. Why is she always, she's always so positive. And is she really that positive? And how did she get that positive? That's one thing we're going to find out. But I want to tell you what, and she's a really remarkable person. And listen to this bio, okay? She immigrated from the Ukraine at like 8 or something, which is a really big deal, right? That's a really big deal. So she wasn't even fucking born here, okay? She probably had to learn the language and get used to the idiot American kids. But listen to this. She was ranked 7th in the United States for ballroom dancing. I mean, isn't that incredible for anybody? Like, but that's not enough, because then she went on to like study acting and do acting, and now she's a fucking successful comedian. So it's like you're welcome. I got her on here, and you are very, very welcome. I'm just going to say before I bring her on, if you want to know anything about her, follow her, find her shows, you should really go see her. Just go to her Instagram, which is Lana, LanaSiebel. Okay? There you go. Hi, Lana.
Hi. Wow. Now I'm nervous. That was, you're amazing. And that was like the best introduction ever. And I need my parents to listen to this now.
Oh,
so they don't think it was a waste of an immigration. Thank you.
So is there anything else that I gave you a really mini? Did I miss anything?
That was incredible.
Did I miss any details or is there anything else?
Well, yeah, I'm very excited. I got the headlining series at the Tiny Cupboard,
which is huge.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was very exciting. October 26th, 10 p.m. Hope you guys can come out Tuesday. And it's just going to be the other comics on it are just incredible.
So. Yeah. Sorry, guys, wrong height. water. Oh. So you're going to be inviting like major comics.
They're major
comics. And you're hosting.
And I'm actually headlining.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
so you're headlining. Oh, for this particular show.
For this particular show, I'm the headliner. I'm doing 45 minutes and the comics.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, yeah. And that's October 26th?
October 26th, Tuesday, Tiny Cupboard.
So I'll be back. I'm going to LA. The 26th. So, okay. Yeah. I'm going to that.
Yay.
I'm buying a ticket now.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be sold out.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's so fabulous. But you've been, like, touring all over.
I started headlining. I did my first 40 minutes back in June this year. And that was really exciting. And, you find out that you just constantly can't get comfortable. You have to constantly push so hard to just get to the next step and the next step. And I so relate to what you said. You always feel like somehow you're not measuring up. I think we all feel that way. I certainly feel that way every day.
It's so good to hear. Yeah. I mean, that's so reassuring. Not that I want you to feel
And it's so funny. Like, I feel like the better we do, like, I feel like you're so accomplished. You're amazing. You have a radio show, you know. I think so highly of you. And so I think it's very encouraging that we all just feel like,
You know what I want to say to you overconfident assholes out there?
Yeah.
You're actually better off to be like me and Lana because you will work hard. You will push push yourself a lot harder and you will grow.
Absolutely.
You are not going to get stuck. You're not going to get stuck. So I want to get into your background, but I just want to hear like how you feel. Cause like I said, you know, when I met you in May, you were hosting an open mic, even though you were doing a lot of shows. And now it just seems like your career has exploded. So tell me how you're feeling. I want to know if how you're feeling.
I just feel so thankful and grateful and fortunate because, you know, like you were saying, I was, you know, a professional entertainer since I was very little. I was dancing at like 10 years old and then competing and traveling all around by the time I was 15, 16 and then acting. But also, once I kind of stopped with the dancing, which I was very happy to, and just teach.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
So I stopped competing like in my mid-20s, late 20s. And it was a very hard transition, but it's something that needed to get done because, you know, a lot of people don't know the way the dancers make money. A lot of them, ones, you know, that you see on Dancing with the Stars that I grew up with and knew.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is, you know, a lot of times you have to take your student to a competition and they pay for your hotel room and your plane. And I couldn't live with myself. And, you know, just knowing, yeah.
Oh, that's a racket.
Yeah.
Everything's a racket, right?
And it just felt like a big scam to me. Just,
you didn't want to have that lifestyle.
I get that.
That's not creative in your creative soul.
Absolutely. It's very short-lived. You know, a lot of times you're in your 30s and you're considered somebody who, which is crazy to me.
Well, your body, you know, I mean, it's competitive. Obviously, it's competitive and your body only goes so far. But also, you know, this didn't happen overnight. Lana's been pursuing comedy for 7 years.
Seven years.
And you feel like finally it's coming to a place where you wanted it to be?
Absolutely. Because, you know, I've had just very draining, awful day jobs. And then I still, despite that, you know, and then I had my son, and then I still had to somehow, you know, the last job was like a 4-hour commute and a nightmare boss, which I don't want to give him any credit or names.
Okay. That's all right.
But he said, oh, I hope you make it, like, you know, a big time commute. I'm like, yeah, you'll see. I will. You know, it was just a real struggle to just get myself on stage after such a horrendous day of abuse and commuting. And I just feel so grateful that, you know,
And you've earned it. Like, you feel like you've earned it, which
I appreciate.
Is so
I do
cool.
think I fit, paid my
yeah.
dues, you know,
yeah,
with the whole
so cool.
barking where you beg people to come to a show. And I would do it at, like, you know, in dead of winter. There was one time where I think I almost had like frostbite. It was like 3 hours. I was just begging people. And I think not one person. Years of that and 3 a.m. train rides, 2 a.m. train rides going, you know, from last stop to the last stop.
What made you think like comedy? I mean, you know, like why, how did comedy?
So I tried I always wanted to write and
like writing.
Yeah. And ever since I was, you know, little, I was, you know, very awkward and chubby before I started the dancing. Everybody said how funny I am. And I kind of always knew in the back of my head, like I have this skill and it's something I really want to use. And so I remember I would write and then I would be too chicken to try comedy. So I tried improv. I did a few improv classes and I was horrendous. I was like the Michael Scott in The Office. I feel like I would come on stage and everybody would leave or, you know, they'd go out and somehow I wasn't told.
Improv is a very specific skill.
You know, it was definitely not for me. And then everybody, I felt like, you know, I'm this immigrant that even though I came over when I was 7, you know, like that I had this like hardship that I'd come on stage with and they were just like being light and doing all these references I had no idea about. So I'd be like talking about like my mother. And there was one scene where I did, it was pretty decent. And somebody was like, you should stick with acting because your acting is good. But which was a compliment kind of to me because I'm like, all right, at least I'm good at that. But I was thinking about doing stand up for 8 years before I finally got on stage for the first time.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
See?
So it was work
guys?
In progress.
See how inspiring this is?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's, and then luckily because of the acting and the dancing and all, my first set went really well. I really prepared.
I'm sure.
Thank you. Yeah. And these comics who were, you know, doing it for a while, they came up, they said nice things.
Oh, good.
They were encouraging. Yeah. So it was, and I find, you know what's funny? I find the ones that are doing really well, the comedians, you know, in terms of like people and career, they're the ones that are kind and usually offer some kind of, when they see somebody who's has a lot of, you know, talent.
Right.
So,
they're more generous.
They're more generous. It's the ones that are bitter and unhappy.
More,
to
they've
give.
Got more to be. Yeah, that's human nature. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you get angry and bitter in comedy and many
you
other
do,
fields.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So the thing that I really wanted to hear about your experience of immigrating here because I have a feeling that that could be a key to like a lot of the way that you've gone throughout your, you know, how you've lived your life and stuff like that and just had like a real influence on you. And so I wanted to
you know what's
hear
funny
the story.
Yeah, no, I'm so I boy, do I love telling the story now. But but yeah, yeah.
Look at me.
No.
Yeah. I was in a shuttle. And
exactly. It's so funny, Ukraine. Yeah, because I don't look like someone who,
cloth,
you know.
Shoes.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous. You look like.
No, I'm just saying. You know,
wait, I wanted to tell people that too. She looks like, you know, she looks like, honestly, you look. You look like a cheerleader almost.
Oh, it's yeah, so that's what people funny. Say, like a Southern. Yeah, I don't look like from Ukraine. Yeah,
yeah, she's like so pretty and so normal looking that like it's you're like, wow, how can she also be like so friendly?
I'm so glad you say, because I feel like my whole point about my stand up is don't, you know, everyone's so quick to judge by appearances, but you don't know just by looking at someone what their struggles were. You know, they're probably downplaying a lot of things. And then someone who maybe looks a certain way that they have struggled and maybe they haven't, and they just look that way and they're playing up for it. So
yeah,
it's just,
right. You don't know.
Everyone's so quick to judge, especially these days. And it's unfortunate because that's how we like distance instead of come closer.
And then we all miss out on that. So what happened? How did your parents wind up moving in?
So,
what happened?
I have so much admiration for my parents, and what a life. I mean, some of the, you know, problems, it's just it the only thing is it gets so heavy when I talk to them that I really wish they would have gone to therapy just because so we could have like a normal dinner, because everything feels so heavy all the time.
Where do they live now?
So they live now in Brooklyn. We all came over, so I was 7. They were, it's so funny, they were my mom was 39, my dad was 43, and my brother was, he's 10 years older than me. He was 17, so we all came over together, and they wanted to come 10 years prior, but then all the parents died. Like, they were only 60 when all the grandparents, they were 60 years old. It was crazy. All three from cancer. And some of the things my parents tell me is unbelievable. They, my mother, she would have someone who took care of them, who became a second mother. And this woman, I think I'm going to go to tears. I don't think I ever talked about this. She was a Polish woman who her parents, she wasn't Jewish, but her parents and her were all taken to the concentration camps. And then somehow she escaped. Yeah. Right. And she, it was crazy. And she was, you know, kind of working at the hospital. And my grandmother had to go free my grandfather from jail because everybody goes to jail in Russia if you're pretty much doing anything, any kind of business. And it was my mother and her brother. So she needed someone to take care of them. And she found this girl. We don't know her age because she doesn't know her age herself. Mm. She was operated by the Germans, and she became like my second grandmother. She died when I was 1, but she, it would be so funny. My mom would say like she had some kind of problem, and she'd be like, this is a problem. You know, like, this is crazy. You know, you bought this skirt for 10, that whatever.
Yeah,
10
right,
rubles.
Right,
this is
right.
Your
problem. You don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was, so this is someone who, you know, lived all our lives with. So it's kind of, it's just crazy, you know, now to be here feeling very grateful for, my parents wanted to leave much prior to that. They hated the injustice and the, you know, being scared all the time. And
we mentioned that I mean, I'm not sure if I made it clear that you're Jewish.
I'm Jewish.
Right. I just want to make sure.
Very harsh anti-Semitism. Yeah. You're just
in the Ukraine. Okay.
You're constantly. Yeah. You can't go to certain schools. If you're like, my brother couldn't go to a certain school.
Oh,
if
my
he's,
God.
Yeah.
It's, wow.
It was truly institutionalized anti-Semitism. So my passport really did say, it's so funny. I just recently looked at it. It was my 7-year-old picture of me, and it said next to it, Jew. Because they want to make sure that you're not a citizen, even though
so
you're
born
there.
You're not a real citizen.
You're not a real citizen.
Isn't
you're
that
second
crazy?
Class.
And we're not talking like World War II
this
era.
This is 89.
Talking, yeah, exactly.
I don't
want
to say my age. How about,
like,
let's say 94?
No, I don't realize. You know, I personally, we don't realize. So, do you remember feeling discriminated against, or were you too young?
I remember my dad would have talks with me like, don't tell anyone we got a TV because they'll take it away. Don't tell anyone we got this nice thing over here because they might, because, and just, you know what, honestly, not only Jewish people, but also like our friends who weren't Jewish. They're constantly afraid of things being taken away by the government because it was a bit of like a wild, wild west situation where you don't know where, it was kind of.
Do you remember feeling anxious or were you about that or was it just normal to you?
Very anxious. Yeah.
Oh, ever so since everybody was anxious. So it affected you.
Absolutely. Scared all the time, can't say certain things, we have to keep secrets and lie, and you can't be truthful and trust anyone.
Wow, that's really hard.
It was, you know, I was lucky that I was a kid, and then and then I was very lucky because I you know, I think for many years I dissociated of actually what happened during the immigration, so only now I'm starting to talk about how and realizing how it was pretty bad. First we had to go through first to Moscow. So that was like the first on the train.
When you got ready to leave, was that like really intense?
It was intense. I remember my dad would just give me like toast and bread. Oh, I'm like, what's going on? I thought, what about like for dinner? Like, but we lived comfortably. My mom was a dentist. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the thing. We lived okay, but we were always, it was the fear.
Anyway, you went to Moscow.
Yeah. We went. Yeah. So, before that, it was, the apartment that we had, another family just came in and kind of, it's like we couldn't really sell it. They just kind of like looked at it and it was like theirs automatically. It was very strange in that way. Mm. Like there was no ownership. Yeah, things could just be taken away. I thought I haven't really delved into asking my parents about that.
But you were never homeless?
Never homeless, but I know they had another home, my parents, before I was born that was just taken away somehow. Man. The thing. The government could just come and take away your home. It was kind of insane.
So you got to Moscow. You got out of the Ukraine and finally got to Moscow.
Then after Moscow, we had to go to Austria. It was a whole thing. And then in Austria, this is kind of nuts. They lined up all the refugees and they said, who's going to America? Because they were automatically kind of supposed to go to Israel. But my parents didn't want to go to Israel. They wanted to come to America. And they lined everybody up and like, my parents stepped forward. They're like, we want to go to America. And it was just them and another family. So then we had to stay in Austria for a few more weeks. And I remember, I think like some of the dinners we had, it was like canned goods, all the refugees sitting around. And I kind of dissociated a lot of it, but it was very strange. It was really, it was like a refugee camp. That's,
wow.
Yeah. And then it gets worse, Lisa. And then we go to, so we're finally out of Austria after like a month, and then we go to Italy. We end up staying there a month, but we were lucky because we had to go through a consulate interview, and a lot of the refugees, our friends, they didn't make it through because their plan was to look disheveled and to feel sorry for them, pathetic. Yeah,
yeah.
My parents were like, no, we're going to, this is what I admire about them. They dressed to the nines.
Uh-huh.
I remember they, you know, dressed me up and they're like, we're going to look presentable and great and with dignity. And we were the few that got into America, the permission. Yeah, it was really. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really something. Yeah, that story. And yeah, to this day, it's it kind of stays with me that, you know, good or bad, like you have to be presentable. You have to kind of always look like.
Put your best foot forward.
Put your best foot forward. Yeah, you can't be weak or vulnerable, which is, you know, that took many years of therapy to try to.
That's exactly what I'm noticing about you, though. Yeah. There's not a lot of that.
That's because that's my life dependent on, our lives dependent on that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember like that whole experience of being lined up? Like it, can you picture that?
Yeah, I kind of, I kind of remember.
Or how did that, was that,
you know,
like,
as a kid, you're like, this is just, but. This is a lot of memories. Some I remember very vividly and some, but it's.
Were your parents afraid? Did you know?
Oh, they were. Yeah. They, you know, they were. It's so funny because to this day I see them when there's really tough struggles and hard situations, they handle it just as if we're going on vacation, having the best time. It's like, it's always a baseline level of panic and so it makes it very hard when things are going okay, because they create, and this is where the comedy, I guess, comes in, because they create these situations where it's stress and anxiety and things we're almost near death. It's always, always like near death. And when it's not, it's unbearable. Yeah.
But it's kind of like, I mean, it must be frustrating because it's sort of like they've worked so hard to like, they should just be so relaxed now and they can't enjoy they got.
They can't enjoy.
And they can't enjoy it. And that's hard to watch.
It's very hard to watch. And it's very hard to be like in a constantly, just sitting around and there's this level of miserableness that's just.
How often do you see them? Or how often do you have contact with them? Is it
once? No, we try to talk every couple of days and.
Pretty regularly.
Pretty regularly, yeah.
So, so then what happened? So you got to come to America.
Got to come to America. And then we, so it was my first plane ride, 10-hour plane ride. And then we got off and we were very lucky that my parents, my dad's cousin, she was the only one that met us at the airport and she took us in to her home. And it was in East New York. And back then it was a really, it's a tough.
Still is.
Yeah. And then I'm like, what? This is what we came for. In my mind, I was thinking, you know, just because you think, you know, no cats in America, Fievel, and then, but we, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean like you think it's going to be this paradise, but it's life, just like everything else. Yeah, it's
East New York is not a great introduction to America for anybody.
Let's just be honest. I know things are changing now, but you know, their home was it was nice, but it's not like what you envisioned. But we were so grateful to them because they were so kind to take us in.
Yeah,
they helped find my parents. Yeah. So to this day, we were always just so grateful to them and the whole. Yeah. And it was funny because my cousin, my aunt was like, don't ignore him. And he was trying to speak to me in English. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on.
You didn't understand English at all when you came here.
Yeah. No, it was so.
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. Wow. Just that feeling of like, what? I think I still took that feeling with me all the time. Like, what's going on? I have to try harder. I have to figure out how to do this. It's always like a scramble of trying to figure out how to get to understand things.
So then I'm guessing your parents got their own place.
Got their own place. I became like a latchkey kid. I had to go to school by myself and then open up. They taught me how to open up my apartment and kind of get myself dinner. And my dad would come home like around 5 or 6. But my brother was going to school and working. My mother was going to dental. She was like learning English at that point. My dad was trying to get work and learning English. So right away, they were like just very hard workers. But it was.
So they were looking for jobs and you had your own apartment. They were looking for jobs. And then did you have help from the government or something?
Yeah, a little bit. But they were so keen on, they stopped all the benefits after 6 months of getting jobs.
So you didn't get a little help.
Because we literally came with nothing.
Yeah, just I know.
Yeah.
I was wondering.
It was kind of
that
nuts.
Makes me feel a little better about America. Yeah. Just a tad. But
yeah.
That's good.
It was very, very scary. I still can't believe they did it. I'm very impressed with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, all are.
Yeah.
We don't have to do things like that.
Anymore. Yeah. It's, I can't, you know, learn the language. They were just going to school to learn the language and get a job. And
so do you remember when you started school here? Do you remember what that
was
like?
Yes, it was awful. It was so frightening.
It was awful.
It was so awful.
You poor thing. Where were you?
I was in the school. It was only a block away.
York?
It was in Bay Ridge.
Bay Ridge.
Yeah,
okay.
Bay Ridge. Yeah. Like 95th Street. I still go by the building sometimes. And yeah, it was just, I didn't know the language. I had no idea what was going on. It was it could have been mumbles to me for 8 hours.
Worse than your first open mic.
Yeah, it was much worse. Yeah. You know what? I think it was. Yeah.
More out of
at
place
least, yeah,
than
understood.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, yes, you know, those are pretty terrible and horrific. Yeah. Nightmarish. Yeah.
So what happened? Like, how did you, like, Like, I can't even imagine, like,
you know, I feel so lucky that I was only seven and it just, things just kind of absorbed. And then I remember I would ask my brother, he went to like English speaking school in Russia. So he knew a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I would ask him like, what does this mean? What is that? But I would do like the homework myself. I don't know if it was any good, but my parents were so proud. They're like, look, she's, you know, doing this or so. And I'm like, yeah, what choice do I have? But yeah, I would watch a lot of cartoons TV.
So you
What
about friends?
Yeah. So I had it was so funny. I had somebody living right across from us and her dad's name was also Michael Feldman, like my dad.
Oh.
And she was Alice Feldman. So she was my age and she also just immigrated. So that was became my,
that's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we'd stayed in touch. I wonder what's going on with her now.
And where was she from?
She was also from, Ukraine. From Ukraine as well. I'm not exactly.
Oh, so
I don't
you
remember.
Guys
yeah.
spoke the same language.
Yeah, we spoke. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's
she was
wonderful.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, thank God for that. Right.
Yeah. It was, I was so thankful to have her. Yeah. So she was about there together. We were together for like about 2 years until we moved. So. Yeah.
And then did you adjust after a couple of years?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a few years in that school. And then it was very strange. I went to a yeshiva, which I didn't know anything about my culture or Judaism.
That's like a very Orthodox Jewish school.
Yeah. So it was actually the first one I went to for a few months, but then it kind of got separated and it became just an all-girls school and it became an all-girls school for girls who were immigrants, refugees from Russia.
Oh.
So it was a lot of Russian speaking and not religious. And that was very, I went there from fifth to eighth grade.
Oh, so was that a good
situation? That was a very good situation. Yeah. I think that was when I started to, that's when I got the whole humor thing. People started to see me as somebody who's
That sounds like a really good situation. Yeah,
that was really good up until I started dancing, and then by eighth grade I was already heavy into my eating disorders because I had to accomplish things, you know.
So how eating disorders are great for like people who are really ambitious.
Exactly.
If you're really ambitious, man, you can really get down to
I'm
being
telling
you
the willpower, I can't do that anymore. That was incredible.
Were you ever hospitalized?
I wasn't hospitalized.
Were you anorexic or anorexic?
I was anorexic.
Bulimic.
Yeah. And then I transitioned from anorexia to bulimia.
Mm-hmm.
Anorexia was from about 12 to 14, 15, and then the bulimia came, which was, I guess, transition. Yeah, it was a good.
I don't know.
It was very smooth. You know, I think people are like, she's a comedian? This is so sad. But yeah, I think.
So how did you get interested in dancing? You must have, that must have helped you really find yourself. I mean, you're obviously got to have a natural ability for it, right?
No, I had no natural ability.
Determination.
Exactly.
How did you get into dancing?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It was the big part of it was, it was very popular, Latin dancing, in like there was different neighborhood, like there's a Bensonhurst studio and then there's a King's Highway studio. And funny as it is, a lot of these dancers are now, you know, the Dancing with the Stars people.
We all grew up
in the same. Yeah, I know them.
That could have been you.
That could. Yeah. Yeah. It almost was. And I'm, you know, still very thankful that I got out of it.
You know, your life is cool. It's awesome.
Appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate it. But yeah, as you know, it's all, everything is smoke and mirrors. And, you know, even the people that you think are on, just how could they, you know, you hear these stories, you're like, how did this happen? Because it's all, so I try to be honest and say, you know, we're all human. Hard work.
And
you still feel like the better you do, the more you're like, oh, I can do even better. And you become more ambitious.
Not everybody's like that.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
So how did you first find dancing?
So yeah, it was like in the neighborhood. I think my friend was going to
Studios in the neighborhood.
My friend was doing it. And then I started a few classes and I felt, you know, very fat, even though I wasn't. And so then I remember quitting because I felt so horrible about my weight. And I remember losing a whole amount of weight by not eating. And then I came back and they're like, oh, wow, look at you. And they're so much thinner now.
Now you can know how to dance.
Now you know how to dance. You're still tone deaf, but look at that figure. I was 12. Yeah.
It's terrible.
It was crazy. Yeah. And then, yeah, I became very ambitious, probably, as I am with a lot of things. And mm-hmm. I was like, I gotta get this right. And the, you know.
So did you go, I'm going to say this. Yeah. Did you go overboard in training?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What was that like?
You know, what's funny. Like, I remember my first few dance partners were like, you know, I'm out. This is you. You're asking for way too much. I just want to have a good time. They were like, just because I think I was all in. I'm like, okay, we got to do this for 4 to 6 hours now, right? That's what happens next.
Like every day.
Like every day.
Including your schoolwork.
Yeah, including, yeah, exactly.
You know what? This is going to sound racist, but it sounds very, very Russian, Asian. Yeah.
Yes.
Tiger mom.
Yes, yeah.
Very tiger mom.
I think
Russians and
Eastern Europeans. It's that ambition, yeah. It's that immigrant.
We have a lot in common. Yeah. That's a good thing.
No, yeah, you're right. It's that immigrant ambition. Mm-hmm.
So you wound up like you were just totally like driven all the time.
And then I just really for some reason wanted to do really well, and then I started competing and locally, like all over different states, and then I was very ambitious to do better and better and train with the best coaches, and I was kind of all me. But luckily my parents aren't stage parents at all, but
yeah,
they
saw self-motivated.
I was, yeah.
But you know, it's really interesting, all that drive.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm feeling two things. I'm feeling like way, you know, impressed. And then I'm also feeling sort of like a little bit like protective of the little girl.
Oh, that's
you
sweet.
Know what
yeah.
I mean? Like
yeah.
that little girl, like why yeah. isn't she like running around outside or
yeah.
just doing, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think motivated you to be so
I'm so drive? Thankful that you see this is why you're so good at this. And I'm so, so grateful to you. Cause, I think it was a real combination of coming to this country and proving yourself, seeing how hard my parents work. And then also, you know, I don't blame them too much, but I think they were so stressed out, my parents, in trying to survive in a new country and doing well for my brother and myself, that there was no attention paid to me. There was, but it wasn't like I didn't feel seen or heard.
But were you trying to
I was trying to impress my mom and my dad, and I felt like nothing was ever good enough. Still feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's
no, I hear you.
Yeah,
I hear you. We're all like that. So you felt that. So you were doing it to get their approval as much as anything. Then
I think then it's funny. I'm not sure if it was more approval, but it was more like, pay attention to me, recognition. Look at what I'm doing. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't think I got that.
I wonder if there was any like sense of fear that if you didn't like make sure that everything was going to be okay, it could just go away or something.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I felt like constantly, I'm fighting against
the powers you can't see that just take things away.
Exactly.
Like out of nowhere, right?
That's where the whole eating disorder comes in, with the, you know, feeling like you need to control everything and anger about not controlling things.
So did eating disorder become a big, did that dominate a lot of your life?
Yeah, it did. You know,
in what way?
Yeah, the anorexia was, you know, just focusing on the dancing, not really having much of a social life, and just focusing on and the work of that at a young age. And then with the bulimia, you know, it was also very isolating. And at the same time, I'm so glad it's been years since I did that and got treatment, because, you know, it really messes with your throat and your organs and my teeth. That was a real, which I think is kind of also a rebellion, because my mom was a dentist. My grandma was a dentist. So it's a rebellion.
So your mom became a dentist?
For the second time in America. Yeah. Yeah. We have a hardworking family. We
I'm glad I wasn't part of your family.
I'm telling you,
what about your brother? What does he do?
So my brother's a computer technician now, and he's doing well. Yeah, he's got his wife. She's a anesthesiologist, and my nieces are becoming dentists. Mm. They're in their early 20s, which I'm very happy and relieved because my mother could, you know, focus on them now.
Oh, right,
instead of me.
But does he have the same drive, and is he the same way about it, things that you are in that way?
Yeah, or, you know, I think we had a very different childhood because he came here when he was 17, 18. He's very hardworking. He has a drive. But I think his childhood, he got, my parents keep crying and like, I'm like, it's fine. I'm proud of who I am. But, you know, that he got more of a childhood than I did.
I see what you're
and
saying.
And attention from them.
Yeah, he didn't have that. I
can't imagine, you know, they had all the grandparents were dying out. Then they went to America. They had, you know, were 10 years apart. And then they had a kid who, you know, my brother was 17, 18, you know, more reliable. And then a seven-year-old who, you know, like...
Well, it sounds
what
like
do we
your,
do now?
Your brother had a more normal rootness kind of childhood that you never really got.
I think so,
you never had that at all.
Yeah, I think that's it. But I think I got very lucky in a lot of ways with my adulthood and pursuing these things.
With the... You know, with the eating disorder, did that become like a serious medical problem? Did people, like, what happened there?
So, luckily I went to pursue my college degree. So I went to college and Pace University.
And studying.
Funny as it is, Lisa, it was right. I went and first year of college was 9/11. Not the greatest timing, so that school was shut down for a few months, and it was very difficult. It was very much a part of my life, and then it was the very heavy bulimia at that point where things there was blood coming out. Mm. So I was like, and luckily there were all these ads about therapy because probably 9/11. Also, I was like, I have a couple of things that I needed to talk about it, and I got an amazing therapist.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and. She really, I'm just so grateful to her.
So being treated really helped you.
Oh, I think it was a life changer. I think I realized what I actually wanted, what I didn't want. It was so weird because I think I was almost like a robot. I wasn't like a human being. I think I didn't know. I was just so, I think, driven. I didn't know who I was or...
You were just doing.
I was just doing.
And you were succeeding because you were, trying to...
I think it came to a brink where the eating disorder got so bad and just feeling so horrible inside about, my life.
Oh.
Even though that's the weird thing is like, it looked on the outside like things were going so well with the dancing, but, I felt like just horrifically bad inside.
Yeah, did you stop dancing or?
So I luckily started to not dance with that dance partner that we did a lot of competitions with. We got, we did international rankings together.
And was that hard? Do you think dancing with him was?
He was very toxic and it was a very.
That wasn't helping.
Not a good relationship.
Maybe not supportive.
Very not supportive.
Maybe
I don't think
too
I realized.
Critical.
Very exactly. That's it. Yeah.
Never good enough.
Never good enough.
Oh,
and
that's
just,
awful.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I felt. Yeah. Thank you. I felt very less than. Yeah.
Were your parents worried about your your health? Were they involved with your anorexia and your eating disorders?
They were. There were points where they'd get calls from the school, like the yeshiva. They were saying, she's not eating enough. I stopped getting my period, but I got it very early. So it was just, maybe that was a matter of that, but that could have been also they were concerned, but I don't think they knew how to.
Do you think they couldn't even understand what the emotional issue you had was?
I think because Ukraine, no eating disorder. It was like, there's just no food. I mean, this was something very new. And then,
did you have friends you could talk to about it or?
I think I was so protective of the disorder because I think it felt like it was getting me nice things.
Yeah.
That I didn't want them to come and destroy my success. That was like, oh, everybody was, you know, it was that they were concerned. But then it was like, oh, look at Lana do this and fit in that dress. And look, it looks so glamour. And,
So after the therapy, did that help you? Was that a life-changing experience?
After the what? The third? I didn't hear. Sorry.
So after therapy, was that, you know, a life-changing experience?
Therapy was amazing. Therapy was amazing. And then I connected with now my now husband, who is like one of the most nurturing, kind, supportive, and also not, you know, very honest. He's not going to just be like, oh yeah, that's great. No, he's going to be like, no, this is, you need to work on this, or you need, he's just.
Right. So you met him in college.
Met him in college. I knew him. We went to the same high school together, but we never talked. Everyone is so surprised that we're married now because we never would.
But you're from the same background, sort of. I mean.
Yeah. Brooklyn. Both grew up in Brooklyn. Italian American. Oh no, luckily he's, not luckily, but it's nice to be with somebody who's very different. He's Italian American. Right. So that was a bit of a culture shock. That's what really attracted me is the, just, you know, I would suppress everything and he would just really allow to get things out. And, and that was part of the eating disorder, right? When you suppress, you control the anger, everything is.
So you were, whatever it was, you were healthy enough to find somebody that...
The therapy helped, yeah.
Yeah, and you probably worked really hard at therapy.
Yeah, I did. I worked so hard. She was like, wow, you're working really hard. I worked hard. Notebooks, you got it.
You work really
She's
hard
She's like, all right,
therapy.
Take a day off from this.
So you were able to connect with somebody who was positive. I also wonder if part of the way... Were you, did you have, was that after your dance partner or before your dance partner?
That was after,
So I wonder if you learned a lot from that toxic relationship with the dancer that you were able to sort of recognize that in.
I think so,
Kind of.
Yeah, I was.
Did you date a lot before your husband?
No, I didn't date too much. I think because I didn't, you know, feel like I had time. But it's so funny. Now I even see how lucky I am because I think. You know, you say it like I'm very friendly and positive, but I think deep down there's very few people I truly like, and I'm I think that's part of being, you know, a comedian too. You're always kind of seeing all the different sides and everybody and arguments, so you're really trying to be as honest as possible with yourself and how your perspective.
You know, do you realize we only have like 12 minutes
That's
left?
That's crazy. This I was know. So fun.
So I want to find out. So I'm wondering like how that all impacted you today, because like what I was saying earlier is that, you know, here's some counter transference. Yeah. I am actually really envious of how you are able to present yourself to the public because that's how I would like to be. And I feel like, I mean, also because you're a performer since you were little, like I don't have a perception of, it's hard for me to see how other people see me or even just put a blank screen on. I'm just not naturally that way or whatever. I haven't worked hard enough on it. So I am kind of curious about like what that's like. Like, are you putting on... like in the situations I've seen you, which are pretty casual and friendly, even though they're quasi-professional. Like, what are you feeling? What is it like to be you? And what is the public reacting to?
Oh, that's so interesting. Wow. First of all, I think you present yourself beautifully.
Thank you.
And second, I think we discovered today, you really are a truly good therapist, Lisa, because I think, my perception ever since I was little of how I present myself with that interview at the consulate in Italy was, this is life or death. You have to present yourself in a very good, beautiful way. Otherwise you will not get anything out of this life.
Or you could be thrown into some dungeon somewhere. Yes. It's not like, it's like a life or death.
It's a life or death.
Intellectually understand.
But you know what? It's very constricting because you, then you hide your anger and your sadness and your fear. And then you feel like you do feel like a mess inside. Everybody does. And 'cause you have to present yourself. So, that's what's freeing about comedy, is you can really show your angry perspective and your, you know, just rage over things. That helps that for, at least it's a format. But yeah, I definitely struggled with just trying to be more relaxed on myself.
This is what I imagine is difficult for you, and I could be completely wrong. But like, I guess what I imagine is that, you know, you do interact with a lot of people, and you know, you're a wonderful, charismatic, positive person, and people do respond, you know, want to be around you. There's no question about that. Don't let her be, don't let her be humble about it.
No.
So, I imagine that like you're like putting yourself this really graceful persona out there, and it's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
Aggravating.
I'm so tired. Yeah.
And that like inside, like I wonder, you know, I wonder if you are self nurturing enough. That's what
I'm trying to get. So sweet. It's so funny because my husband and son, you know, I'm really myself around them, and they're their selves around me. And they're like, I'm like, see how everybody says how kind I am. They're like, yeah, they don't know you. They don't live with you. So it's nice that I get to come home and
you have that balance.
I'm a human being. Yeah.
But comedy and comedians and comedy clubs are so difficult to work with. So how do you do that? Like, how does that?
You know, I really, the more I've been doing it, the more I just realize it is a profession. It's a career, and I treat it like a job. And I'm just going to try to continue to be as like kind and professional and prompt as I can be. And that's all I could really do, because yeah, it's it is, a lot of it's very subjective, and you know, a lot of it is, I hate to say it, but women are getting a lot more opportunities, but it's still,
it's still
male
fucking
driven.
Sexist.
Yeah,
it's still, also really sexist.
I do feel that's why I really enjoy so many. I think there's incredible male comics, but I enjoy female comics because I think we had to do so much more to get there.
But like, what do you do when you've got to deal with assholes. There's just no question.
Oh, there's been a lot of assholes.
So how do you do that?
Yeah, I there's been plenty of times where it would be so much easier to be like, fuck you, how dare you. But I really struggle to take the higher road. And because, you know, at the end, they're just having their inner conflict. Yeah, and they're having their inner conflict. Let them do that. But it's a much more powerful, you know, one of the things I learned from my mother-in-law is, you know, it's a lot more powerful to be kind.
Yes.
And, yeah. And she was very nurturing to me. She passed away a few years ago. But
that's great. So you had her too.
I had her. She was a real female force she was so strong. And everybody, you know, a lot of people even feared her a little bit, but at the same time, they adored her because she was so kind. And
so I wonder, like, as far as like your own social life, do you like, are you, you don't probably, I'm guessing that you don't even want to, you don't like socializing.
You know, it's so funny. This is exactly what I'm trying to figure out right now. There's things that I need to do that I could enjoy myself. I have this root thing of, I don't enjoy anything. And I do enjoy performing.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I mean,
but yeah,
you feel it. When you're on there, of course.
Cause I think I when I'm on stage, it's so stressful that I don't have to think about anything else. I have to just focus on that moment. But I think that's so funny. You just got to the root of it. And we just had talks about this, that I need to figure out how to do things that are just enjoyable. It's okay to just enjoy and not work all the time. Be stressed out all the time.
And really running out of time for the question about being a mom. But these are a lot of, this is a lot that you have worked through. So how does that affect you as a mom? Like, what's that like? Or
I mean, there's a lot of guilt for not, you know, being there. I am very lucky. My husband's like amazing. He stays with him.
Far as like imparting like work ethics, homework, things like that, like how do you guide him?
I think I have a good influence and my husband too, in terms of his humor and the way I think he's just exceptional. He's 8 and he loves shows that you don't see an 8-year-old watching. He enjoys Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That's fabulous.
And, yeah, it's amazing. And he's pretty much like we all watch the same shows, and he's begging to watch, you know, Sopranos. We're like, no, that's one thing we're he's just such an interesting guy. But, you know, the truth is, when I would do homework with him, he'd get C's. And when my husband does it, he gets A's. So I think he's very lucky to get. He's like, you made me. Why would you? I think I'm still.
Do you wonder if you're putting too much or not enough pressure on him to do well in whatever he's doing?
You know, I think we always saw how bright he is. Uh-huh. So now he's getting great grades because we're like, you know, you're almost holding out on us. We got to put you in a specialized school because you're so his intellect, his emotional intellect and just how the way he feels for people. You know, he's a little Brooklyn kid who curses and has this tough exterior, but he's so kind and worries about his grandparents. And
so is he pretty self-motivated?
He's very self-motivated himself.
I think he's got the genetics.
My husband too, though, very, you know, worried and also very motivated.
Do you think that getting to the level in comedy that you're at, that you've strived to get to, and I do get the sense that there is a sense of satisfaction at this point. I'm sure by next year it'll be like not good enough. You'll be back to not good enough.
Yeah.
But do you think that is like a way or healing a way to allow you to start thinking about having more time for you?
You know, the truth is, I feel like the better I do, the more I'm not doing enough. It's so funny. So that's why I get why people don't even want to get to the next level, because you're even less happy. It's crazy. It's very, you are. There's a second where you're like, oh, this is going well. When you hear the laughs and the connection. But yeah, it's the further you get, the more unhappy you are. It's very strange.
You know, it's funny. Your parents don't sound like very good examples of how to have fun.
No.
What about your husband? Is he good at that?
He's much better. And this is exactly right before we left. It's so funny you say this. He was like, you know, can we do something nice? Can we do something fun? I want to have a good time. And you just hit it. It's so funny, Lisa, because that's exactly what I'm struggling with right now.
And he knows how to get that out of you. You know, I have to say, just from talking to you what's impressed me the most about you, and there's so many things, but is that your relationship with your family, you know, your husband and the family has been like so, I don't want to say healing, but because it's so much more than that, you know, it's allowed you to flourish.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my husband and son are just such good people. I feel very lucky.
I think that's your biggest accomplishment, out of all the accomplishments. And there's so many. I really am.
I would agree.
And I really love hearing that. I mean, it makes me feel really good. I don't know.
That makes me happy. Yeah, because that makes me very content.
You've kind of haven't been able to have balance personally, but you have found balance outside yourself, which is very rare. I think it's very rare to have a relationship that really complements another person and is so healing.
I think, you know, when I prayed in yeshiva for a husband, you know, a goyish husband, goyish means not Jewish.
Yeah.
I didn't think, you know, I'd get him. I got very lucky. He was really godsend. Yeah.
So anyway, we've got like 1.5 minutes left. So I want to say thank you. I loved having you on. This is so
amazing.
Great.
And
I just want to make sure that everybody follows you on Instagram. That's Lana Siebel. I will be posting it on my, on my page and stuff like that. It won't be hard to find if you go to my show on. And,
I can't thank you enough, Lisa. You're such a phenomenal woman. I'm starting to do bits more about being a feminist, but also not knowing which category I'm in and how a lot of women aren't for each other. And you're truly, truly for it. This is so rare to see somebody like you.
Thank you
so
much.
I think you're phenomenal and I adore you. I'm so grateful.
So mutual. Yeah. So mutual here. But I also want to remind you to, you know, listen to Radio Free Brooklyn. We have so many great shows. We have so many great hosts. We have so much great. It's a great community, and we have all sorts of stuff going on. And you should make sure to go to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.org. Like I said, donate, sign up for the news. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.